Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to the Fantasy NBA Today podcast.
All right, let's get this sucker rolling, everybody. Welcome to Fantasy NBA Today. It's Thursday edition. This is off-season episode number four. I've decided I'm going to try to do a better job. Last year, I was able to accurately remember the number of off-season shows until we got to about like 35, and then I just... There were a bunch of shows where I was literally counting on air how many off-season shows I'd done. That was great lessons and great podcasting with me, Dan Vesperis. This show is a sportsethos.com presentation. Always want to make sure we get that out there. And you can find me on social media at Dan Vesperis, where, in fact, I think most of the live viewers have been these days. Shout out, I guess, to Twitter for having serving a purpose right now. Today's show is kind of a weird one. We don't have any games tonight, although we did have some news out of yesterday. The Sixers pulled off the big comeback. Miami seems to have lost Jimmy Butler for whatever happens to them here over the next... I mean, I guess they could potentially make a crazy deep playoff run. It just feels somewhat unlikely without playoff Jimmy on the roster. And he was a mess yesterday. Now, what we don't know is how much the knee played a factor, but if he's really tried to play through a sprained MCL, you could understand why, you know, maybe he wasn't so great in yesterday's ball game. Joel Embiid, also not that great. Nick Batum was a huge reason that Philly was able to come back and win that ball game. He had 6 3-pointers. And in a wild twist, they put up like almost 70 points in the fourth quarter, and it did just squeak over the total. So we would have had that one wrong. I did tell you guys I thought Miami would keep that ball game close. They did. In the second one, I said, if there's any game in these play-ins that's probably not going to stay under, it's one involving the Hawks because they can't defend anybody. And sure enough, the Bulls put up a buck 31 on them, and Chicago won by a lot. What I didn't know was, looking at the side, it was like, how could you... Bulls by three felt like a ridiculously low number. I thought maybe it was a trap. It wasn't a trap. They're just... Atlanta's just terrible. Is Trae Young even going to be there next year? We don't know. He was a team worst minus 27 in that ballgame. And old man DeMar DeRozan, 44 and a half minutes under his belt, plus 27. He was the counterpoint. And Bulls were able to smoke the Atlanta Hawks, which we all kind of figured was going to happen. Now the Bulls are going to get the Heat, likely without Jimmy Butler. So Chicago may be kind of getting a little bit of a free pass into that 8 seed. Congratulations on likely getting manhandled by the Celtics in the first round. But hey, you know, it'd get better than missing it, I suppose. We're not going to talk about the upcoming games on today's show because tomorrow we'll have a special treat for you. The big dog, Aaron Brewski, going to be on the program. We'll be talking about his big win in the $18,000 big FBA tournament in fantasy. That's obviously a really nice one. We'd all like to take home enough to go get ourselves a car. And Brew and I will be talking about the series prices. We'll have all of the series by Saturday, unfortunately. So we won't have, we'll be down two series. Whoever comes out of Chicago, Miami, and whoever comes out of Sacramento, New Orleans, those we won't know until the end of tomorrow. But we're not doing a weekend show. So there's kind of no way around that one. Brew and I will break down the six series that we know of. And any thoughts on individual game ones and such as well. Of course, Aaron has the playoff betting journal going on at Sports Ethos in the wager pass right now. It's every bet he makes in the playoffs from the first day to the last day. And it's won every single time he's done it. So that's kind of fun also. So we'll save all that stuff for tomorrow. We can leave today for a very, I don't know if they call it existential. That's probably not the right word for it. This is just sort of like a deep emotional topic in fantasy sports. It's not even so much a lesson learned, because I think the answer to the question we're going to pose is different for probably every fantasy player. All I can do is offer you my own feeling on it, which I think probably carries some small amount of weight. And the question that I ask you is, how many cooks in the kitchen is too many cooks in the kitchen for fantasy sports? The cooks in this case are fantasy analysts or voices. It doesn't even have to be analysts. It could just be sort of friends that you trust. They don't have to be like bona fide analysts. What do you have to be considered an analyst these days? Do you need a daily podcast? Do you need to tweet a couple times? I don't know. Like, what's the... There's no obvious cutoff. And I don't know that if you wanted there to be one, that there's a way to even implement such a thing. Because, like, in the modern universe, we have social media. Anybody that is good at fantasy can pop on there and start yelling about it. And if you win, if you're giving good advice. I think, ultimately, the public at large is going to decide who's an analyst and who isn't. And that's not really even the point. The point is, how many voices in your head is the right number of voices? For me, the answer is one. I'm guessing that's probably kind of a low number. Sort of tongue-in-cheek. I have found that for me, Dan, taking in other voices, this is specifically about draft season, because in the middle of the season, like, there's so much happening that there sort of isn't even time to handle that sort of thing. That's not to say that other voices can't provide something that I don't see. In fact, this year is a great example of I was not high enough on Jalen Johnson. And when the B150 came out, even before that, because everybody at Sports Ethos kind of talks behind the scenes on this stuff, Brew, in particular, was like, no, you're way, way, way too low on this guy. And I was kind of like, what, are you sure about that? And yes, obviously, yes, I was way too low on him, because I was like, sure, late round flyer. Obviously, he was much better than that, and the B150 helped steer a few of my teams in a better direction on that topic. In fact, there was one league, it's a keeper league. This is like the ultimate in indignation for these guys. He didn't get drafted. As a 15-round league for 12 teams. 180 picks deep, he didn't get drafted. I picked him up after the first game of the season, and now he's going to be my most valuable keeper going into next year. That was a steal to end all steals. And this is a guy who didn't get drafted in a lot of leagues. But that's probably not really the example that makes the most sense in this regard. Because when it comes to late flyers, you can have 1,000 voices. They're going to say 1,000 different players, and you're going to pick the ones that make sense to you. Where I think this question becomes more relevant and pertinent is more like the top 8 rounds. 9, maybe even 10. In a fantasy draft. So you're not, in the 10th round, you're starting to get into flyer zone. But first 8 rounds, for sure, you're still drafting players that are kind of like consensus going to get opportunity or playing time. There's a pretty obvious line that gets drawn where all of a sudden the guys that are getting drafted are no longer the guys that you know are going to play 28 minutes of ball game. And suddenly it's like, well, I don't know, maybe this guy works. And it's probably somewhere in the ninth round. Which is basically to say it's somewhere around pick 100. So I would actually, I would tell you guys, go back to your drafts and look at like right around pick 100. So early to mid ninth round, eighth round gets you to 96. And say, all right, well, where's the obvious cutoff? And I would say Bruce Brown is probably like the cutoff in one of my leagues. And then you get into Zach Collins and Keldon Johnson and Shaedon Sharpe and Spencer Dinwiddie and Jordan Clarkson. And these are the guys that start going in that range. And yeah, there are going to be some wins in there. But the point is that the majority of these players are like, eh, might work kind of guys, as opposed to the ones before that where you're like, yeah, these guys, like you go 5, 7, 8 picks before those names that I just started talking about, and you're at, I mean, Chris Middleton's not a great example because he was beat to hell, but like Austin Reeves, Michael Porter Jr., John Collins, Trey Jones, Keegan Murray, Wendell Carter Jr., who I don't like very much as a fantasy player, but there was pretty consensus that he was going to get plenty. Marcus Smart before he got hurt. So somewhere between 90 and 105, you get into that, we can take wherever. And don't worry, we'll have plenty of shows on that range of players, what we learned about who to draft when you get into that flyer zone. Today's show is about what you do before that. So for me, and all I can do again on today's program is give you my own experience with this and see if it helps you in any way, or maybe you hate it. I don't know. Perhaps you guys go a different direction. The argument for having a lot of voices in your head is a pretty clear one. Someone could make a point that you didn't think of. That's fair. That's fair. But at least for me, someone that I am of the ilk that I'm doing a ton of work on this stuff, and I feel like what I'm able to do with my top 75, the guys that I like in there and the guys that I don't like, I feel pretty set on them by the time I'm done with said handicapping and work. But it goes deeper than that. Because I, right now, what I've said to you guys makes it seem like I just think I'm better than everybody else. And I don't think I'm better than everybody else. I'm not gonna like lie to you guys. I think I'm better than most. And you kind of have to. It's arrogant, but it's that same like the guys in the NBA, they don't wonder why they're there. They feel like they belong. I feel like I belong. I feel like I'm good enough at this, at fantasy, and then at yelling fantasy at all of you guys, that I don't feel like a fluke. And that comes off as arrogant and dickish, but you have to. If I was out here just like, yeah, maybe, I don't know, this could be fine, nobody would want to listen to that. You have to be willing to put your foot down in fantasy. You have to be willing to plant your flag in opinions, and I think mine are good enough to warrant being here. But it's not that. That's not the point of all of this. I'm not trying to say, oh, listen to me and listen to nobody else. That's idiotic and way over the top in arrogance. That's not it. My argument, and now we're getting to the real thesis of today's lecture. My real argument is I, and so then I think this can be extrapolated a little bit, I would rather miss on my own work than miss on someone else's.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I want that to sink in, because it's a weird sentence, but it means exactly what I wanted it to. I would rather miss on my own work than miss on someone else's. There is something emotional tied into that element. Think about it. Think about it in daily life, in whatever it is that you do. It could be fantasy, it could be something else. Think about a time where you've gotten something wrong on your own work or advice. And think about a time that you've gotten something wrong on something someone else told you to do. Which one feels worse? It's the second one. For probably 99 out of 100 of you, it's the second one. For the other one, it's like, well, at least I can blame someone else. But I don't think that's how most humans feel. So when you're working through a fantasy card, and this is, again, this is why I prefer to have just one cook in the kitchen. I had plenty of misses this year. And we'll go through them. We had more hits than misses by a lot, but we had plenty of misses. And we'll go through them because we're honest and we're transparent and we're going to learn from them. We're going to learn from the hits. We're going to learn from the misses. I say the misses. Not my wife. The things we missed. Right now, sitting in this chair, just right off the top of my head, if someone was like, Dan, what are the misses you remember this year? It's the ones that I was steered into by looking at other people's work. Don't worry. We're still going to have all the analysts on the podcast leading up to the season. And I'm still going to basically not be able to avoid seeing what other people are doing. And this is not how to put the mother-loving disclaimer here like I always do. This is not about any one other person in particular getting a thing wrong. Because again, I got a lot wrong and we're going to talk about all of it. But the ones I remember are the ones I got wrong because I was sitting there on draft night and my name came up on the board and I looked at the board and I saw a name and I was like, I don't really like that guy, but you know, so-and-so, like a lot of these guys seem to think he's going to be all right. And then they ended up with them. The best example of that this year is Darius Garland. But that's just this year. It could be anybody from any year. It always happens. There's always one where I look back and I'm like, how did I end up with this guy on my fantasy team? And I'm looking at the league right now. I have the league pulled up where I ended up in fourth place. I got my buy-in back. And it happened to me twice in this godforsaken league, where I drafted guys that I really didn't like. I took Darius Garland at the end of the third round and Jaylen Brown at the beginning of the fourth. These were two guys that weren't on any of my lists. None of them. I don't have a clue how I ended up with these dudes. And yet there they were. The number of names that were still on the board at that point of guys that I did like and guys that I was targeting is through the roof. And I didn't do it because I was like, maybe those guys will get back to me later. Or, it feels like a little bit early to take these dudes. Like Tyrese Maxey went, what, round and a half later? Absurd. Absurd. How did I end up with these dudes? I don't understand it. DeMar DeRozan, a guy that I liked, went a round later. Nick Claxton went almost two rounds later. Jalen Williams went two rounds later. Oh, yeah, I got to take these guys. What am I doing with Jaylen Brown? These are two guys that, like, it made no sense at all. Now, yes, I think there was an element there where it got to my pick and I was like, ah, dang it. Like, all the guys that I was targeting were coming off the board. And then you have that moment where it's like, well, do I take this guy that seems to be like a consensus this range dude, or do I take the guy that I like that's in the next grouping? Oops. Chet Holmgren was still there when I took Darius Garland. I don't know. Why? I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. The only explanation for this is that over time, when you see enough stuff out there, and I'm not even, again, I'm not talking about these players in particular. Those are the two that are driving me insane this year. Because if I make decent picks in those two spots instead of clunkers, I'm probably in first or second place in that league. If I make decent picks in both of those, I probably win it. If I make even a decent pick in one of the two, I'm probably in, you know, the positive instead of break even. It's driving me nuts because my other picks in that league were by and large pretty good. Other than, I guess, like Chris Paul was not great. I don't know. You get into these modes sometimes where you kind of outthink yourself and you end up with players that you had no business drafting. And so there's all this stuff that's swirling around in your mind on this same topic. Is it, oh, I want to blame it on somebody else? It's not somebody else's fault that you get to this point in a draft and you're like, oh, I'm going to do this thing that I had no intention of doing. So method number one, how do you fix it, is got to be the next question we ask, because we've isolated the problem. The problem is that you see in here hundreds and thousands of things leading up to fantasy draft day. No matter how much any of us tries, we're going to hear from more than one person. Because I'm on Twitter all day, so takes are flying by and stats are flying by and how guys are doing during training camp is flying by. Coaches' reports are flying by. Analysts, fantasy analysts, regular analysts, beat writers, all that stuff is flying. You're like, you're hearing about names. You're hearing about every player in the league 100 times. It's almost impossible to avoid hearing from anybody other than just like a one analyst that you trust. You could try, but you're probably not going to succeed at it. And it doesn't have to be me. If you just like hearing my voice and ignore everything that I say, that's also fine. I do appreciate you having you here regardless. There has to be some kind of solution to this, because solution number one, which is avoid everybody except one voice, is basically impossible. Solution number two, trust in your work has to be the correct answer. It has to be. A slow draft would probably also fix a lot of it, because most of the mistakes we make are when the shot clock is winding down and you're like, I don't know, this guy also seems fine. But choice two, meaning trust your work, has a few corollaries to it. So yes, the overarching answer to this question of how do you avoid the pitfalls of too much information, trust your work, but make sure that you are more explicit in your work. What I mean by that is, and this is sometimes where the Dan Vespers bucket system falls apart a little bit, because you get into a bucket system and I might have a guy like a Darius Garland or a Jaylen Brown. In this case, Garland would have been in the next bucket for me, but it wasn't super clear where I would have had him in kind of that next bucket down. He wasn't a guy that I wanted to draft at 35, not even close. He was like 55 or 60 the previous year. There was absolutely no reason in 1,000 years why I should have been like, oh yeah, Darius Garland, he's definitely going to jump a round and a half or two rounds. I think he was in the 50s the previous year. Why would I draft him a round earlier? He wasn't about to get to do more. If anything, coming into this season, you had to look at that team and go, okay, well, they just brought in like two new shooters and Evan Mobley gets better. No one on that team was about to do more coming into this season. And sure enough, Garland did not do more. Like, the obvious handicap there should have been super obvious. He took 1.5 shots less per game, and his turnovers went up, and everything about it was just like a big oops. All of the handicap said it's not getting better. Best case scenario was he repeats year over year, and actually his field goal and free throw percent both went down, which, you know, whatever. Aberrations, reality, the hell with that part. Even just understanding that he was going to do less should have been enough for us to say no. And Jaylen Brown was right in that same range last year. He was number 46, but also looking at the Celtics, there was just no way that the C's main guys were going to do more this year. Jaylen Brown, last year, 26.6 points, 49, 76 and a half were the splits, 7 boards, 3.5 assists, like a pretty beefy chunk of usage this year, 18 shots per game. Why? Because that team freaking brought in Kristaps Porzingis and Drew Holiday. More like Porzingis was the big one there. Time Lord. Like, I don't care that Malcolm Brogdon got shipped out or Marcus Smart. These were not guys that were, like, they brought in starters, usage guys. The only guys that were winning on the Celtics were guys like Derek White, because everybody was like, ooh, you got to fade him. And then he just kept rumbling. Without massive usage, he was just very, very good at every little thing he did. Basically, every single other player on the Celtics was down year over year. Jason Tatum was down about, I think, what, 3-ish slots? Not a lot, but some. Tatum was down a little. Jaylen Brown was down a bunch. Drew Holiday was down. By the way, kudos to Kristaps Porzingis. He was so unbelievably efficient this year that he actually held steady season over season. The only guy that went up on the Celtics was Derek White. Everybody else was either steady or down. And yet, again...
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Here I was, going against my own handicap, going against everything that I said leading up to the season, which was, you're going to see Brown, Tatum, probably Porzingis take small steps back. The nice thing about Porzingis is that because of injury history, in Roto, he's always going to get underdrafted, and head-to-head, you're going to dodge him. But Roto, he's always going to get underdrafted because you get that first, early, second round per game stuff. But like, none of these guys was a target. I figured if Tatum fell to like mid late first round, it was a relatively safe play there, because even if his per game fell off, he's hyper durable. And yes, he finished at number 12 by total. So fine. That worked out totally fine. But like, Jaylen Brown still going in the 40s. On a year where you knew things were going to get worse for him, what am I doing? And I know a lot of people are going to hear this podcast and be like, Dan's calling out the people that had these guys ranked higher. I legitimately have no idea who it was, if anyone. Everybody might have had him lower. But you see these names, you see them flashing by, you feel this moment, and you get caught up in it, and then you do something dumb. So, the answer again, while I get sidetracked by how I went against my own handicap, is be more explicit in how you line them up. If Darius Garland and Jaylen Brown were in the next bucket down after, say, like this is a Roto League, Porzingis was basically the last name that I was thinking about taking in the... Actually, he was kind of in the next bucket down also. I think Paul George... Honest to goodness, it was probably Chet Holmgren, and I still didn't draft him there for whatever reason. I don't know. I think maybe I thought he was going to get back to me, and I knew that there weren't going to be enough assists later, or who knows. I got basically to the end of one bucket, and now I'm looking at the next bucket, which had Garland in it, and had Jaylen Brown in it, and had LeBron in it, and had Jamal Murray in it, and had Evan Mobley in it, and DeAndre Ayton. And Vooch, and all these guys that, for me, were in a bucket that was like 40 to 60. But I really needed to be clearer in my own work. Tyrese Maxey, Nick Claxton, Jalen Williams, DeMar DeRozan. All of these guys were rolled up into one bucket. But there really needs to be kind of strata within that bucket. As if to say, I think all of these guys probably finish within a round, round and a half of each other in a per-game ranking. That didn't end up being true, but that's how I felt on fantasy draft night. But what you need to be clearer on, and when I say you, I mean me, I need to be clearer on, is thinking about it from that like bar in the air that we discussed. And those that are new, I'll try to explain this very quickly before we try to get to the final thought on this particular episode. I want you to picture, if you will, a bar in the air running horizontally with fantasy draft markers as what's being measured. So the bar is just basically like an x-axis. And a player is represented within that bar. In this case, say, Darius Garland. DeMar DeRozan could be another one. And the bar is, the ADP is marked somewhere with a whatever color you want, a blue dot or something like that. The bar is gray. And at one end, the low end, is what's the worst per game rank you think that player could put up reasonably? And at the other end is what's the best per game rank? And you shade the bar based on a probability of what happens in which direction. So like for DeMar DeRozan, the worst was probably like 65, and the best was probably 25. And the odds are he was going to finish somewhere around where he was the previous year, which, I mean, lately, he's a freaking grandfather clock. DeMar DeRozan was number 31 per game this year. He was number 28 per game the year before that. And, like, it just goes on and on like this with DeMar. 26 the season before that. I mean, we're going back. Do we want to go with the 72-game year? 42 that year, which, I mean, still pretty good, but he didn't take quite as many shots. You want to go to the season that got clipped by COVID, 36. He's a watch, man. So, yeah, odds are, worst case scenario, like 60, 65. Best case is like 25. But probability suggests he's probably going to be towards the upper half of that. What about then you say Darius Garland? Well, I mean, you know, in a best case scenario, he also probably gets into that 25 range. But a worst case, worse than 65. And then if you look at the sort of bouncing around of him, especially now with all these other players around, the odds are probably that, I mean, maybe you say the odds that he got into the 20s was slightly better than DeMar, just because if you pile up assists, you can climb fast. But the odds of one guy being higher than the other was probably lower. So Garland, Jaylen Brown, these guys probably fall into a strata within that bucket, ever so slightly behind DeMar, but not so significant that it needs to be a different bucket. Because the bucket really talks about per game, and per game, at least going into the season, I thought those three guys were going to be within about 20 slots of each other. Now, Jaylen Brown's not all that far away from being 20 slots from DeMar, but this is, I think, the answer, is being much clearer with the strata within our buckets, because you're not going to be able to avoid everybody talking. And then at the end of the day, when your turn comes up in that damn draft and the clock is winding and you got 40 seconds or you had a minute and all of a sudden you're thinking about it, and you realize the players you wanted are gone and you're scrolling around a little bit and now you're down to 20 seconds. First of all, have a cue set. And second of all, pick the guy where you won't kick yourself at the end of the year. Because even as you're doing it, in the moment, you know, oh, I just picked Darius Garland. That guy wasn't on my list. If this doesn't work, I'm going to be kicking myself. If it works, great. What's the victory there? So in my opinion, try not to have too many cooks in your kitchen. But if you do insist on doing so, be very clear and deliberate in the way you line up your work. Because at the end of the season, you'll have hits, you'll have misses, you'll have your own hits and misses, you'll have the hits and misses that were steered by others, which might be me for you guys, versus your own work. I promise the ones that will make you feel grosser or more gross are the ones where you did it on someone else's advice where it went against your own work. So try not to do that as we move forward. I have more thoughts on this. I have more thoughts on all these things, and we'll continue to weave our way through it as the offseason goes. But we're going to put a pin in it for now because I said so. I'm Dan Vespers for Fantasy NBA Today, a SportsEthos.com presentation. Again tomorrow, we'll talk to the big dog, the big Aaron Brewski. Big wins this year for Brew in his huge money leagues. We're going to hear some wild stories about like tens of thousands of dollars coming down to a rebound on the last day and what that does to a man's sphincter as you're waiting on it. I couldn't possibly. My leagues are, you know, 50, 100, 200, 250 kind of leagues. Throw me above that and I wouldn't even be able, I just like my eyes would cross and I'd pass out. Too much pressure. I found that out about myself, by the way, when I was a professional handicapper, is that if I was betting large sums on games that I was then telling people to also do, I couldn't focus. I needed to eliminate my own emotional attachment to it. And then I was able to give much, much better advice. And that's kind of the way this is, too. So I play in a lot of low money leagues where my emotional attachment doesn't cloud my judgment. That's a different show. That's not even a half. That's like one point in one larger show. Anyway, have a great day, everybody. Have a great Thursday. Can't wait to talk to Brew tomorrow. We'll get into some sports betting a bit for our Friday show. This is Fantasy NBA Today. We'll see you guys soon. No games tonight. Find something else to do. Read a book. Nah, don't do that. That's boring. Bye, guys.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.